And I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder. One of the four beasts saying, "Come and see," and I saw, and behold, bad movie futures.
Hello, bad movie lovers, and welcome to a special presentation of Bad Movie Futures. Now, usually these episodes are part of the members-only section of Bad Movies We Love, but for this episode, I decided to do things a little differently and release it on the main feed because it's the newest movie we've ever talked about here on the show, and it's still currently in theaters. So, without further ado, I was joined by my friend Keon, who runs the very popular and well-curated Mr. Collects Movies account on Instagram, to talk about what may be the most hotly disliked movie of the year. It's Justin Tipping's Him. Keon, welcome back to the show, kind of. It's not like a proper Bad Movies We Love episode with all the bells and whistles, but it is part of the brand here at Bad Movie Futures, and it's good to have you back.
Appreciate you, sir. I'm so happy to be here. Nick, you are my favorite guy. Let me tell you, you're my favorite guy to talk to about movies and stuff. So even when we're not recording, and I'll send you some random posts about whoever, it's always still fun to talk to you about stuff. So glad to be here.
This is going to be a little bit different than the other episodes of this particular subseries that I've recorded, in that the other discussions I've had were with people that also liked the bad movie that we're talking about. But this movie, despite the fact that people seem to hate it, has had a lot of word of mouth of people very proud to hate it, or at least very willing to go online and say that they didn't like it. So we're talking about Him. I guess it's going to be the most divisive movie of the year, although the majority consensus is that it is bad. And so you're going to be representing the side that did not like it. I'm going to be representing the side that did like it. And we'll see if we end up meeting somewhere in the middle, or if we both just go our separate ways and rally the troops on either side.
Yeah, no, 100%, man. And I'm not on the hateful side where I'm like, this is a piece of crap, no one should see it, it's terrible, everything about it's bad. You know what I mean? Like, I know when to recognize when some things are good about a movie and when some things are bad, and some things I could see, you know, the vision. So I'm not like the total hater who goes on Instagram and sees a trailer of Him and say, oh, that movie was terrible, you shouldn't watch it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's not your personality type. There's a lot of people that are that personality type, and I heard from a lot of them. And even before I saw it, I booked my tickets the night before, and then the morning of, I was already seeing people who had not seen the movie using negative reviews of the movie as justification for their own belief that the movie was bad, even though they hadn't seen it. And I was like, that's a weird, like, Ouroboros way to go about this. It's like the snake eating its own tail, and that, how do you know if you're going to like it or not if you don't see it? And then you just use this as like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's just very strange. So I was like, all right, we're obviously not starting in a very good place. But I got tickets to go see it at 11 in the morning. So like a proper maniac, I was like, what is the first available showtime? And usually it's not that early, but I went and saw it on a Thursday at 11 a.m. And I liked it. I don't know if the other people in the theater liked it, but you work at a theater and you did not have a full house for this at even 2 in the afternoon. So just observationally, you can tell that the movie didn't do well.
Yeah, it's, you know, what you were saying earlier about social media and like before the movie comes out, people are already hating it. Like, that's such an annoying culture we have now. It doesn't have to be a movie like Him. This could be a Marvel movie. This could be a small movie. This could be a, you know, any type of movie. And someone's always going to say stuff based off of a trailer or something. Unfortunately, no one has Not that many people have an open mind these days to just go see the damn movie and make up your own mind. But yeah, I do work at a movie theater. I'm an assistant manager and projectionist. So I'm the one who sets up the movies, the playlists, all the fun stuff. And I also get to go watch them too. And so I ended up watching the movie. And I kid you not, there was only two other people. Our first show time was at 2 o'clock. And I'm surprised you're saying you saw it at 11. Because we were only, I think, allowed to start at two
I was also
before
surprised because I was
it.
like, I'm going to go to the movies tomorrow. Let me see what's out. And I started looking on the app and I'm like, oh, well, hello there. There's a 10:50 a.m., which means it's probably not going to start until 11:20 actually. So I was like, I'll take that. And then it'll be the first thing I do with my day. And maybe that experience of not being like, hey, this is a Friday night where I sort of based my entire evening around it. Like I had dinner plans, I made a date night out of it or something like that. This was something that sort of like the equivalent of like a Saturday afternoon matinee at a movie theater. So maybe like I went into it with less prickly expectations than some people.
I would say I didn't even have an expectation at all. Like I put that trailer on a lot of the playlists for movies that we have, so I can hype everybody, to go see it. And the trailers that came out for are so edgy. They're such neon A24 type of trailers where they're like super artful. There's blood, there's yelling, it's stressful. So I thought, okay, this is the type of movie it's going to be. It's a little silly, but it's about football, but horror football or what is it? So like I didn't feel like I'm like, okay, I'm going to put this movie up here. And the fact that Jordan Peele's name was used a million times for the trailer, but it says, and people need to remember this, produced by, and that means only a small amount of things. Either he just gave him the money and then maybe put an input here and there, but it's mostly the money. So everyone was like, oh my God, it's Jordan Peele. It's another big Jordan Peele movie. It is not.
I did read that a lot in that there was a lot of confusion and people being upset by the fact that it wasn't actually Jordan Peele. So I'm like, okay, well, let me reverse engineer that. So you're upset that it wasn't actually his movie, but if it was, would you have been kinder to it knowing that it was his? So I don't know how much that plays into it, but I know a lot of the time when trailers are getting cut and ads are getting made, you want to use the most famous or most recognizable property you have at your disposal. So it happens a lot within, I think, horror movies as well, where you'll see it be like, oh, from the studio that brought you Annabelle and The Conjuring comes another one of those movies. So you get a general sense for kind of like the tone and quality that you're going to get. And I think that's obviously what the marketing is doing here with Jordan Peele's name. But also maybe a movie like this doesn't get made at all without his involvement. But I want to know too, are you a football fan?
I like football, man. I'm not like a crazy football guy, in terms of like watching it all the time and all that. But like, I'm in a friend group where sports are like their thing. So like, they tell me things, they send clips. But I would feel like even if I wasn't a big football guy and I just maybe know the basics like I do, this movie doesn't really do the whole football picture. It just does, I want to say, the small things like the training, the underdog. Like there is not really even like a football game at one, like an actual football game in the movie.
I think part of that is due to probably budget restrictions in that you would have to rent out a stadium. I mean, the last time I saw that, maybe like on a professional level, was what, Dark Knight Rises? Where, so you need a Christopher Nolan Batman movie to be able to shut down a football stadium for filming. And then maybe if you go to like a college area, maybe during the off season, you can get into one of those stadiums and film. But I think for me, like I'm a big football fan. Like I'm wearing my Bills sweater right now. I play fantasy football. My wife plays fantasy football in our league. So I'm very familiar with the culture of football, but also as someone who sort of has been able to step back a little bit from it, I'm also very aware of a lot of the problems that football has as sort of a business. And what this movie, I think, points out is like a borderline religious entity, right? And there's a lot of history with the league itself that they're not talking about, quote unquote, the NFL here, but it's pretty obvious that that is, in fact, what they're talking about. And you kind of walk a slippery slope, because for me, I'm thinking back to movies like He Got Game, like Hoop Dreams, like Any Given Sunday, stuff like that, that sort of captures thematic things that are part of this film, but then doesn't do it in a way that is maybe as stylistically abhorrent to people as this. You know, Hoop Dreams is a documentary. He Got Game, Spike Lee, Any Given Sunday. I don't even remember who made that, but sort of very much focused on like the internal rivalry of football. And so as a fan of the game, I can both be like, I want my team to win a championship because I've been waiting for a long time, but I can also recognize all of the very bad and messed up things that the league participates in. And one of those, I think, which is very present here in this film, is the identity of brain trauma. And I don't know if you saw Concussion back in 2015 with Will Smith.
I did not.
Okay, so in that movie, he plays the doctor that basically discovered the link between head trauma in NFL athletes and CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So the brain disease that causes all of these other issues. And we've seen some of the shakeout of that in players. Like there was a NFL player who shot himself in the heart and wrote in his suicide note, I want you to study my brain. We saw it with a guy who was in the wrestling business who killed his whole family. So there's all of these horrible things that are linked to CTE. And I feel like this movie's biggest weakness isn't its style or its criticism of football. It's maybe that Cameron's story is kind of like its own story. And then Isaiah's story is also kind of like its own story. But there was maybe a zero, maybe like a sort of non-zero chance that this movie would ever get a sequel. And would there be an appetite to tell the Isaiah story first and then the Cameron story second? Probably not. So then you have to eliminate the possibility of that sort of being like the entire story arc and just like layer them on top of each other. And I think that's where you get this movie that's kind of like, it feels very jam-packed. I'll say that.
Yeah, man, I completely agree with what you're saying, and that, like, you know, those football movies you mentioned, there's lots of stories to tell about football, right? Football isn't all sunshine and roses, right? It is an industry at the end of the day. And it's funny that you brought up Concession. I'm sorry, not Concession. I'm thinking movie theater. Concussion. And in college, I did a paper and study on CTE and how football affects the health. And you were talking about that guy who shot himself. There are tons of stories about players who like had this headache that would not go away, and then they would take suicide because they can't deal with the pain anymore. And so with some of those ideas sort of present in this movie, you know, about like the pressure and stress and physicality of football, you know, those are the things I wanted to see in this movie, like that amplify it. And it is shown in this movie, but it's shown sometimes to a ridiculous, monstrous degree that it's not going to resonate with people watching, because they're going to say, I don't get it, you know?
No, that's fair. And I think a lot of the early reactions that I read to it seem to be pointing to confusion or not being able to follow the story. And I'm like, to me, as someone who like kind of, I understand football and the head trauma associated with it, so I didn't feel like the story itself was confusing. But to your point, these kind of like big swings where it takes a very reasonable premise, right? It takes a very sort of reasonable identity of these two characters, but then it puts it in a hyper realistic environment, out in the middle of the desert in this like state-of-the-art training facility. And so for me, I'm like, okay, I get that this is sort of making fun of this culture in football, in that there's not really that place in the desert that exists like that, but there are private training camps where guys will bring in receivers to work with. Or I mean, there's the famous, like, I think it's like a, forgot what it's called, but there's tight end university where a bunch of tight ends get together and train. There's a quarterback club that's run by a particular coach that he helps guys in the offseason improve their mechanics and stuff like that. So like, that is a real thing, but the way that it is portrayed is bending what we understand as reality. And so everything from like the crazy fandom outside the building with the crazy lady that somehow sneaks in to the sauna, like, so it's just weird enough where I think if you go in expecting like a straight horror movie, it's maybe too football centric. And if you go in expecting like a sort of more traditional football movie, it's way too horror centric. So like for you, I know that we kind of like talked a little bit about the movie before we jumped into the recording, but like, what was the thing that stood out to you as the movie's like primary failure, I guess?
The primary failure to me is the supposed parts of the movie where it amplifies something to like a crazy degree, like the sauna scene that you brought up. Like, it ranges from being disturbing and silly without it being in the middle, because then there were some parts I was seeing where it does the amplification of something, either symbolism or imagery, and you're like, okay, this makes me want to laugh. This doesn't make me want to like be like, oh, like, you know, this imagery is so good. Like, I hate to say, like, use this as an example, like, but Robert Edgar's, you know, Nosferatu, like stuff like that where you see images and symbolism of stuff and then you're like, oh my god, like that's disturbing or that's weird. Here, it's just kind of laughable because it's taking it to a degree that's so insane that if for someone who's not used to watching movies like this is going to be like, what the fuck was that? You know, and then but me, who sees these types of movies regularly, rather A24, Neon, you know, weird art house movies, this felt like a mainstream art house movie that's simple. But some people aren't going to see it like that and are just going to be like, what the hell was the lady doing in the sauna room? You know, but isn't understanding the importance of the idea of the lady in the sauna room, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
that's my main thing.
Yeah, I think that I think it's more the latter, in that it's about understanding the idea of the lady in the sauna room, not really asking yourself like, how did she get in there? This is crazy. She's going to beat him with like a hot stone or something. So yeah, the framing of the idea is a little bit out there. And I mean, that's part of why I wanted to watch the movie in the first place, because in the trailers, I'm like, okay, this movie looks like it's going to be intense and be crazy. And that's kind of what I want to see. And it reminded me a lot of the movie Divinity, which is a black and white indie film starring I think it was Stephen Dorff. Yeah, it was maybe like 2 or 3 years ago. It's kind of like experimental. Oh. It came out before The Substance, but is also sort of like focused on a particular item that like makes you a better version of yourself, and like it's very isolated and it's very focused on its imagery, and it's also mostly received as a bad movie. I see the Metascore is a little higher now than it was, but when I first saw it was like this movie was definitely getting tanked. And so it adheres to some of those stylistic choices of sort of like avant-garde indie horror, which I actually like quite a bit. And I think maybe wanting to fold in the religious iconography is going to be a little blasphemous for some people. But I mean, on the poster for the movie, he's posed like Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And in the film Concussion, there's this scene where Will Smith's character is talking to maybe like the district attorney or something like that. And he's talking about trying to hold the NFL responsible for the cover-up of the CTE scandal. And what they tell him is, they, being the league, owns a day of the week. And he says it's the same day that the church used to own. So it's this reflection on not just the power that the NFL has, but also sort of the worship that has flowed with that. Because it's not just, you know, people playing sports at this point. Like, the NFL is a gigantic machine that does border on religion. I mean, every Sunday around the country, you get stadiums with 60, 70,000 people in congregation. You know, I was the first Sunday back of football and I had the quad box up and I was watching four games at once. I was like, oh, I feel like I'm back at church to some degree. And it did take sort of a growing up in order to detach myself from the sort of like worship aspect of it. Like, the more I actually learned about the league and the world, and just the more I learned about myself, I'm like, yeah, it's not necessarily a thing that you need to worship athletes, but there is a culture that does that, that lets people slide with all kinds of bad behavior. So I think in that moment with the lady in the sauna, you see both the identity of the crazy fandom that in a movie like Celtic Pride, which if you've never seen that, is a hilarious comedy about sports culture kidnapping basically like a Michael Jordan figure the night before a game seven so that their team can win. So it's like it takes that sort of comedic identity and sharpens it to the point where it's life or death. And then you put both of these people in a situation where there is a murder in this case, and they're just going to cover it up and pretend like it didn't happen. And if you watch enough football, you'll know that probably there's at least a dozen guys that are under investigation from the league for domestic abuse, or there's a guy who's suspended right now for killing somebody in like a high speed drag race. There's another guy who is in jail for killing someone with a DUI. So there's all kinds of these instances, not like, hey, this guy murdered a woman in the sauna at his private training facility, but that is just another like heightened example. So I feel like what it does is it looks at real football to some degree and then like heightens all of the problems within it to this like super exaggerated level. So I think I understand why people didn't like it. I just personally didn't find the movie to be like confusing. And it's only an hour and a half, right? So it's not even like, oh my God, it's 3 hours of this.
Yeah, but see, the thing you said at the end there, it's not confusing to you. Yeah. It's not confusing to me, you know, because we watch movies on a regular basis. But if you're going to get the average Joe to come to the theater, who maybe they watch a movie once every 3 months, I could not imagine something like that.
Yeah.
You know? I've seen a movie like every day, every other day. Some people are like, yeah, I go like once a year. I'm like, you're crazy. But, you know, if that person goes and sees this movie, they're going to be like really confused if they don't watch movies like that. And so then they go out after the movie's over and go, man, that was terrible. I mean, what was that? You know, like, you know, and as I'm in the theater, right, and I'm walking around, it's a big theater. So outside reactions, when I hear people walking and talking about the movie, they go like, what the hell? You know, like those are the things I hear a lot when a new horror movie comes out or something like this comes out where it's more divisive. And it's very loud when people are talking, you know, as they're walking out. So, you know, you don't hear the most like, oh, yeah, that was cool. You know, it's more like, whoa, you hear that a lot.
Yeah. And I think that is fair. And I think also it's maybe a little bit sort of just a microcosm of independent filmmakers sort of breaking big in that, like, Justin Tipping is an interesting director, but he doesn't have like a huge filmography, right? He made Kicks, he made some short films, he's worked in a lot of TV, but this is like his first movie in, I want to say, like 10 years. So you kind of have like a guy who is an interesting sort of, obviously, like a visionary thinker, and he wants to bring this idea to the screen, and maybe without something like Jordan Peele's stamp of approval on it, it maybe never even gets made. So it is kind of like a weird clash of independent ideas and indie cinema coming together and meeting in a way that is really off-putting to a lot of people, because he wrote the script partially with two other people. So his hand and like his artistry is in the film. And I guess I'm curious, like, if the movie, say, stripped out maybe the allegory about sort of football as religion and just kept it to like football and family, does that maybe soften the curve?
I think, you know, even as football being used as religion and with the poster being as controversial as it is and stuff, I like that idea. You know, some people really do idolize football like that and its players. I mean, sometimes when my friends are talking about certain players, I'm like, they're talking like them as if they're like gods. You know, yeah. They're like these crazy people that have like these abilities that no one else has, you know? So it's, I like that stuff, but I think if the movie didn't have these crazy, hyper demonized sections of like, what the hell is going on? And it just stuck to a guy who has a weird, stressful mentor who's like, you know, pushing him so hard, and it had no demonizing of anything. I think the movie would have been way better for it. It would have been more simple to a degree for people to get.
Yeah, it would have been like Whiplash with football.
Exactly.
Instead, this is like Whiplash with football, but then also there's like monsters and horror stuff going on, which honestly, like, to me, that doesn't sound like something I wouldn't watch. But with the way that Whiplash is revered in sort of contemporary cinema, it does set a high standard for that sort of mentor and pupil relationship. But I think there's a couple of like lines between the two of them where they talk about sort of priorities, right? And there is this iconography, there's a religious iconography all through this, including the point where like Marlon says, like, he is treated like a god. He is a god, basically. They talk about this thing of the hierarchy of family, god, and football. And so you have one guy saying, for it's God first, then family, then football, and that's our protagonist. And then you have the other side of that saying, oh, well, for me, it's football, family, God being last. And so I think it brings in to question a lot of that stuff about hero worship with these players, but also with the league in general being de facto like religious entity at this point. And so I think, taken as a whole, I look at this as sort of a condemnation of the culture of like sports dads that force their kids into sports, and then the sports that then treat them like commodities, and then also the fans that treat them like gods and don't respect them as human beings. So I feel like there is actually some really interesting subtext there. And I think if you like spend any time online, you've seen the videos of these crazy like little league dads, like their kid struck out and then they're going to go and like beat up the umpire. It's like, the kid's seven, man. Just let him play baseball. But there's this thing that Cameron says to Isaiah, where I think he says like, or it's during the interview where he's like first being introduced as the new guy on the team, and he says something to the interviewer about, the last time I talked to my dad, I told him I was quitting football. So there's this idea that his dad was forcing him into football and he didn't really want to do it. And I think that maybe doesn't get explored textually as much as maybe it should have. Like, if you remove the religious stuff and the horror stuff, and it's about this kid who's trying to reconcile like his father's death and not really wanting to play football, but sort of feeling like he owes it to his dad to play football. So I think it demonizes the kind of parent culture that wants to live vicariously through their kids' success. And then that's just like one element of sort of what the whole story is looking at in terms of like how it decries football. And I don't think it's just football either. I think it's just using football as an example, but pretty much every major sport would fall into this category. And want to read a quick review because I was going to talk to my buddy Seth about this, but he found somebody else to talk to. And but I did want to read what he had to say because when him and I talked about it privately, I was like, yeah, I think you nailed exactly what the movie was about. And like him and I were the only two people that were sort of like acknowledging that we liked the movie within our circle. So we kind of like felt crazy. But he said that Him is the heightened artistic expression of the cold reality presented by Hoop Dreams. It's condemnation. No wonder folks hate it. And then he plugs his podcast, Movie Friends. But yeah, I think that is the identity in that, like, Hoop Dreams was this documentary following these kids from high school to college to theoretically the pros, and like what it takes, how the agents treat them as commodities, like what the league is going to want from them. And I read Andre Iguodala's book as well, where he very matter-of-factly spells it out. Like, yeah, when I was in college, like, the coach isn't concerned with us. Like, he's concerned with like winning as the coach, and he knows that as soon as I'm gone, the new class of freshmen, junior, sophomore is all going to be there. So he's concerned with his job. He's not really concerned with me. And it was just kind of like very, very matter-of-fact in the sense that if you want this kind of life to be like a superstar athlete, the things that you have to sacrifice for it are things that you probably wouldn't imagine. And I think that's really what this movie is saying. It's just saying it in a very bloody, unrealistic way.
Yeah, you nailed it right there. And it's interesting that you bring up like all these other things about the Hoop Dreams and then like you and your friend talking about it, because it sounds like you have a better handle than I would on this. You know, I'm coming in seeing this like horror football, but then you're seeing it with a background of, okay, here's the football industry, here are these people, here's the story about this kid who, you know, went to a thing, you know, all these things. So that gives you probably a better appreciation for the movie than someone as simple as me who just knows the basics of football and maybe some controversies with it. So you can appreciate something like this more. But like you said at the end, you know, it was those things to a hyper stylized, bloody thing, and it didn't need to be that.
It's true. I don't think the movie needed to be that in order to get its point across. However, I appreciate that the movie was like, we're going to tell this story, and also we're going to build all these sets that are crazy. You know, we're going to frame it in a way that makes it feel like it's not even on Earth to some degree. Like, a lot of pagan symbols here. There's like human ritual sacrifice. You know, there's all these things that really sort of crank the intensity up to 11. And so I think for me, it's almost like I understand the metaphor that you're going for here, and maybe it's a little bit too much. So I could see that people were like, oh yes, like I didn't need all of this like window dressing in order to understand what the movie's about. And I think what Justin Tipping as the director is sort of like ultimately asking, because in the way that the movie is shot, I'm like, this guy's a football fan. Like, I can tell because the way that you chose to film the movie, the way that you chose to film certain scenes, his attention to detail and the specificity of it. I was like, I think this guy clearly likes football, but also is grappling with how do I like something that I know is this sort of like bad thing in a lot of ways. And I think that's kind of where the movie actually gets me, is that how can you sort of reconcile liking the sport and also it's kind of like checkered, shady business in the background. And like football just somehow manages to still do that. And I think, I know to your point, the casual like football audience is probably not paying attention to the fact that the NFL settled that lawsuit for concussions and has been paying out to concussion victims for the last, I want to say like what, 10 years since they settled, a little bit longer than that. So a lot of that stuff gets buried very, very quickly. A lot of the controversies that come out around the NFL get buried very quickly because it's bad for business. So I think to somebody who's like maybe a fairly casual observer, you're not even going to hear about that stuff because the NFL is a huge multi-billion-dollar organization that is able to put all that stuff to bed very quickly. So this is a movie that is like, I want to say, like, not for casual fans, which I think we've kind of like understood, but it's not necessarily for football fans either. But Seth, whose review I read, he kind of like hates professional sports for all of the reasons that this movie points out. But then I also am the person that loves my football team. I'm wearing the gear right now. I pay attention to football, play fantasy football, all that stuff. But then also am forced to reconcile with the dark side of all of the things that they do. And so I feel like maybe it really is not a movie for everybody. And, you know, it being an indie director making this kind of film, maybe it never was intended for wide audiences. But I do have a crazy theory about the movie that I want to run by you. But I also want to go to some of the negative reviews that we've come across here. So I'm just going to go to Rotten Tomatoes and we'll try to put a name to some of these. We'll just try to put a reason to some of the negativity. So the first one is from the Hindustan Times, interestingly enough, says the film's attempt to marry horror and sports drama results in something uneven. It's too surreal for sports fans, too disjointed for horror purists, and too exaggerated for viewers seeking for a grounded critique. So I think, yeah, that sort of points out that it is doing all these things, but it is sort of like too far in each direction for coherence. Let's see, we've got Entertainment Voice says we're left more confused than challenged by this film's bizarre Hail Mary pass. Yeah, see, I wasn't confused. We got, but that was like a 2 out of 5. A movie where a lot of things are happening, yet nothing really feels like it is.
Yeah.
I see this one is all sizzle, no steak. This guy says, for all its flaws, it's hard to call it boring. The spectacle alone may be enough to keep some viewers watching. Him is all flash and pizzazz with no emotional grounding. Marlon Wayans' performance is incredible. However, the film is so wrapped up in its visuals that it doesn't concentrate on the script or the characters. So for you, like, how did you feel about Marlon and Tyreek in the leads? Because I felt that they were good and compelling enough, if not fully deserving of their own stories still.
Well, first of all, with those reviews you brought up, I thought a lot of those are pretty accurate. You know, yeah. I couldn't have said that better myself. And as far as your question, I love the acting. The acting was not the problem. You know, I like these characters and I like the acting for both of them, especially with the guy who plays as the quarterback. Like, the other movie I saw him in was the I Know What You Did Last Summer, like, sequel remake thing.
Yeah, okay.
And he was great there. So to see him have a main role in this movie, I was like, yay, you know, you were good in that movie, even though I didn't like that movie. And it's cool that now you're getting your own movie. So I think he was great. And Marlon Wayans, like, doing a serious movie and not something comedic is always, like, something I would always want to see. So they did fantastic, to be honest. Like, that was not a problem I had.
Yeah, I didn't think the issue was either of them. Although I still feel like Marlon's story as Isaiah is maybe more interesting to me than Cam's, because he already went through what Cam went through when he was younger, and then also, you know, had a gruesome injury and then came back to be the best ever after that. And I'm like, that's an interesting trajectory, but it definitely requires you showing more football and telling a story over the span of like 8 to 10 to 15 years rather than like 6 or 7 days in the desert. But Marlon came out on, I think it was Instagram, because he was talking about this movie, and I think he handled it with a lot of grace. And he says, just to be clear, I respect critics. Their job is to critique. I respect their work. It shapes our industry. But an opinion does not always mean it's everyone's opinion. Some movies are ahead of the curve. Innovation is not always embraced, and art is to be interpreted, and it's subjective. I've had a career of making classic movies that weren't critically received, and those movies went on to be classics. So don't take anyone's opinion. Just go see for yourself. Love to all. Him in theaters now. So it's a nice, like, subtle plug, but also a way to acknowledge that, like, hey, yeah, the movie is getting bad reviews, but at the same time, you know, when I've made several movies that have sort of gone through this cycle, and the knee jerk reaction isn't ultimately where the movie lands, and making this like a primary theatrical release, I may have done more harm than good. But the fact that it is kind of like on the tip of everyone's tongue, have you seen an increase in attendance for the movie at your theater? No, it's been worse because of the reviews.
It's been so, I mean, reviews could have affected it, but pre-order says it all. You know, if it's going to be a big, big movie, you're going to see the tickets already sell already advanced, you know, advanced sales. And, you know, his comment on Instagram, I like his comment, like the way he says it, but he was in Requiem for a Dream. And that movie obviously is going to be like a cult classic for like tons of reasons from the time it was made and so on and so forth. Him is not a movie that's going to, in my opinion, is going to be remembered as like a cult classic like he's kind of saying. I think he's not realizing that times are in. I don't think him is on that level of even potentially 10 years from now to be talked of as like a classic.
Well, that would sort of get to my ultimate question that we address on this show, is how do you feel that this movie is going to be received 5, 10, 15 years down the line from now? Obviously, you don't agree that it's going to end up in the classic territory, and I don't think it's on the level of Requiem for a Dream, but do you feel that the response is going to soften? Because I see that the critic score on the film is like a 13 or something, no, 29, but the audience score is a 58, and that's really not that bad. It's got a 5.5 IMDb score. It's got a 38 Metascore. So it sounds like just the average audience member, you know, both on Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb, sort of gives it a full sort of 2 points higher than critics. Critics are sort of keeping it in the 3 out of 10 range, where it seems like audiences have it more in like the 5 to 6 range.
I know, it's a tough question. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, what's considered a good movie to me, or even an effective movie, is if it stays on my mind days after I watch it. And, you know, I've gotten a lot of feelings for, like, a lot of movies I've seen sometimes give me that feeling, sometimes it doesn't. You know, I would say this movie is like a theme park movie. It's like you go on it, you watch it once, you're like, whoa, okay, I'm done. I don't want to ride the ride again. You know, like, there's no, like, I come back to this theme park again, and you're like, I want to specifically go on that ride. This feels like the ride you have to pay for on top of already paying for the ticket. You know what I mean? This movie is like that. It's not bad in a lot of terms. That's like, this is a bad movie with shitty budget, shitty cinematography, shitty acting. You know, it wouldn't be fair to say something like that, because it's not. But the thing is, it's so hard, it's so complicated, you know. I don't know where to put this. It's not like an A24 or Neon movie that you're like, whoa, you know, I'm gonna add this to my A24 Neon list of movies to watch eventually at some point again. It's like this weird out there movie that's like, you know, when we're doing a top 10 this year, it's going to be, you know, it's going to pass by everyone, especially in the horror movie department. We've had movies like Weapons, Together, you know, even Together, another movie that's technically has a smaller budget that I would say this movie probably does. Together is going to be way more of a movie that people are going to be remembering than something like this. And, you know, that's the sad reality.
Yeah, I mean, something like Together was a little bit more narrowly focused, and it's like, we have this singular idea and we're going to chase that down. I think this film grapples with a lot of ideas at once, and I have seen some of the negative reviews give it credit for being competent in a lot of ways. Like, the production design, I really love the way that the movie looks. I like the way that the football stuff is shot. I kind of like the insanity of, you know, when they bring in the free agent wide receivers to train with them, and you just got like the random white boy getting hit in the face with the footballs until his stuff is all smashed in, you know, in order to sort of be, it is a commentary on sort of undrafted free agents as well, in that in order to like get in the room and get that relationship, like, maybe this is still your chance. So you do have those guys that are like hanging on. There's professional adult football leagues that are not even NFL. I mean, there's USFL and there's another one. There was XFL, but I don't remember if it ever came back. But there were like two competitors that were like springtime football leagues. And so what it did was it extended the dream of being a pro football player to yet like another group. And then there's guys that like play recreational tackle football like the way like I used to do that with basketball, right? You know, like we pay the referees to officiate the game, we pay for the league, we support everything, but we're doing it to go and play the sport that we want to play and to do it in like a safe and, you know, reasonable environment where we have a gym and all that stuff. And so that extends to football, where I think that that dream of being a star is like this very intoxicating thing. And so I want to circle back quickly to this spoiler theory that I have, and I want to see if it makes sense to you as an impartial observer. So I think it is plausible, if not likely, that none of what we see in the movie actually happens, which is why it is so crazy, because when we first meet Cameron really as like a adult, you know, he's out there practicing on the field and he's throwing the football at the goalposts. And so he goes and he hits the ball right off the post and then it's spinning weird. And then you hear the ringing of the goalpost and you see this like slow zoom onto the like the bolts that are holding the goalpost in place. And then a lot later in the movie, there's a quick flash to that as well when there's like that ringing sound. And so what I think actually happened is he knocked the goalpost loose and it came down and hit him on the head, which is why he had the traumatic brain injury. And so basically everything after that is the result of like this super aggressive CTE, because CTE causes cognitive issues like memory loss, confusion, difficulty planning and organization, trouble concentrating. It changes mood and behavior, including depression, anxiety, aggression, inappropriate social behavior, and it creates motor problems and difficulty moving. So I feel like there's just enough there for me to think that like it's more realistic that the goalpost collapsed than some guy in a goat suit showed up and bludgeoned him with a hammer, right? So I feel like there's a weird dreamlike logic to the whole movie that if it is sort of this basically like the devil tempting him in a religious allegory, like the devil tempting him with like, this is what your future could look like, but you have to basically sacrifice your soul. And so when we get to the end of the movie, which people have seemed to have a problem with, where he's, you know, hammering the NFL executives with the spike and the sword and he goes on a killing spree. I think when by the time that we get there and we see the sort of pentagram on the ground, I think there's a pretty clear indication that it's like there is a devil worship thing going on and there is some sacrifice that plays into that. So he's saying no to all of that, but I still think it's all sort of happening subconsciously. So either the head trauma just puts him in a coma and this is all sort of like a dream state, or because of the severity of the head trauma, all of these things that he imagines every step of the way is like not actually really happening. And so if I give it that grace, and if I understand that the director of the film likes football enough to like pay attention to what CTE does to the brain, I feel like it might actually be smarter than it's being given credit for right now. So I just don't know. I would love to talk to the director. I'm trying to get a hold of like one of his agents to be like, come on the show and talk to me. Like I love the movie. I'm not here to like belittle you or anything, but I would love to hear about like what you wanted out of the film. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Probably not going to happen, but I'm going to shoot my shot and hope that it does. So do you lend any credibility to my crazy theory?
I think it's a great theory. I think what you're saying that's the only thing that would save this movie. You know what I mean?
For I'm doing some gymnastics not
make
here.
Sense, but for it to make sense. And I heard that, you know, that allegory is really good. And then someone else said he died that night, went to hell, and this is what his hell looks like. You know, yeah. And I'm also like, that would also help too, because then that would explain all the ridiculous stuff going on, you know, to a small degree. But also I couldn't totally believe that, because there's a at a point he calls his mom and stuff, and you know, it wouldn't fit in that in that world or something, you know, it would be messed up all the time then. And so I don't know. But what you're saying is a very good theory, and that would make the movie a lot deeper and cooler, and I could give it that one star up, you know,
If I've done nothing
it,
else, I've added a full entire star to your review, and I'll take it.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's not a bad movie. You know, there are way
Thank
worse
you.
movies than this,
Yes.
but I'm still gonna say it's still kind of an awful movie because it's just too much at the end. And if you like too much type of movies, like I watch a lot of too much type of movies, but I feel like the purposes that serves those too much type of movies has their thing. You know,
Yeah.
this is an ambitious too much type of movie, which it's cool for him to do that, but it's hard to land. And that's especially the end. I mean, the end is like this, you know, this whole crazy bloodbath of him just killing everybody. Spoiler, I guess. But I mean, technically, you see it on the poster, and I think it's even in the trailer at one point.
It's fine. If people are listening to this, I expect them fully to already have seen this movie. I'll put a spoiler warning at the beginning just in case. But I do kind of like the hell theory as well, because it's sort of in that analogy, it sort of teases him with what heaven would look like, but then makes the idea of getting there just constantly hell. And I think it is a very important distinction for him to have that conversation with Isaiah in the sauna, where Isaiah is basically like telling him, like, don't be me, be better than me. And so it's like there's an awareness from Isaiah that even he sort of is trapped in this arrangement that he's made. Like, he's stuck in hell as well. And the only thing that he has is like to be the king of hell. And so when someone else is coming for the throne, you know, he has to defend it in that way. So I think there might be more here than even I am willing to sort of like give it credit for at this point. But yeah, if I could talk to the director, I mean, that would be awesome. But I'm gonna ask you to scale this. So we don't do really like 5 stars exactly here, but our scale is hate it, didn't like it, don't care, liked it, or loved it. And so I know that you already said it's not bad, it's awful. So where on the scale do you land?
That's hard. I usually do 5 stars because
Well,
that makes it harder.
treat it as 5 stars. 5 being you loved it, 1 being you hated it.
Okay. I put it at 2.
Okay.
And on Letterboxd, I didn't put the heart. Yeah, I just left it. I just put a flat 2 and I said, yikes.
That's a fair reaction. I gave it the heart but no rating and wrote a review. So that's sort of how I approach it, is that I liked it. I don't really know if I can like quantify all of the reasons behind it, other than that it worked. It feels like it was super specific, but I might just be the person that it was intended for. Like, if the focus is that narrow, I might just be like the key demographic for this type of movie. And if that is the case, then hey, it's made just for me, and that's totally fine. But yeah, is there anything else that you wanted to say about this movie before we wrap it up?
You know, there is nothing wrong with it being a specific
No.
demographic too, you know, because not everyone's going to get your art, right? When you put your painting in the art museum, you know, some people walk by and say, oh, what the hell is that? Other people go, whoa, you know what I mean? So the director has promise. Like, I won't shut him down. His other popular movie was the lion guy. You know, he had the controversy on Netflix. He's the
Oh,
lion, you know, but then he made a theatrical movie of it. I'm like, how did you go from that movie to this? That's a whole different shift, you know, and whether he's just good friends with Jordan Peele, I don't know. But you know, I also want to bring up Jordan Peele's L's that he's taking. You know, he was so pissed at not getting the rights for Weapons that he fired his bidding team, and
Wow.
then he got the rights for this, but then this did terrible. So he's just taking a bunch of L's recently. I feel so bad for him, but also like I want this to be a humble thing. I think people put Jordan Peele on this mountaintop that he's one of the best freaking directors ever. And I still think he's the new kid on the block and needs some humbling because I don't think he's there yet. I love Get Out. You know, Get Out is my favorite by him, but everyone's treating him like he's the best thing. That's why they put his name on everything on this movie. Yet it failed so hard.
I think part of it is that his name has a certain like box office guarantee attached to it. So maybe everybody that went to see it because his name was attached to it. And if not, then, you know, we're really looking at like a movie that maybe doesn't even make it to theaters at all and go straight to streaming or something. And I actually liked Nope. I felt like that was his best work and really sort of grew the ideas that he had presented before that. So I feel like he is evolving as a filmmaker, but at the end of the day, he still only has three movies.
Yeah.
So I'm not upset with people that are big fans of his, but yeah, there is like he's fairly early in his career. And so maybe he bounces back with his next new movie, his original idea.
Yeah, his next thing is like he's working with Hideo Kojima on like a game,
There you
and
go.
it's a horror thing, and I'm like, cool.
It sounds great. I love Kojima. I think that's a good pairing, so I guess we'll
Yeah.
see how it goes. But
What are your thoughts though? What about your do you have any last things you want to say about the movie? I loved your explanation about everything. You know, when we first said, okay, let's have a discussion about it, I'm like, all right, what's this guy gonna say? You know? But
This
after
dude's
hearing all your
nuts.
thoughts, you know, I know you're very well at speaking about movies and really diving in, and with this conversation, I see you put a lot of thought into it versus just being like, well, it was cool, you know, type of thing. So I really appreciate you taking the time to really kind of explain it and your theory and everything. It was good.
Yeah, no problem. I think that the more this movie is not going to last in theaters long because, you know, it's not making money. You know, I think the studio will recognize that and would rather give it a shot on streaming or on demand because then, you know, it will find its audience that way, like many things do. And I think the right people will really appreciate what the movie does. And so you may have just like a small contingent of like hardcores. And like the movie's not perfect, but because of how negative I've seen people be, my sort of knee-jerk reaction is to be like, well, I'm gonna defend this, even though like, you know, it's not my favorite movie, but I feel like there's way too much negative about it. And so, like, I feel like the need to stand up for it because, like, I'm an underdog guy, right? Like, my team, you know, lost four Super Bowls in a row. They were like one of the worst teams for like 20 years straight. So, I always want the underdog to win. And so, in this case, this is like an indie director kind of getting his big break with Jordan Peele backing him and going through Monkey Paw. And I feel like there are some fair criticisms. Like we read some of them where I'm like, yeah, I can't really like disagree with a lot of the ideas presented, but I don't feel the need to also like punch down on this movie. So I would say ultimately what I really did was I liked it, right? I probably didn't really love it, but there's things about it that I loved. And so that's why I was like, I need this movie is like fresh in everyone's mind. I need to talk about it. So let me get it on Bad Movies We Love and we'll do a Bad Movie Futures episode with it. I think probably within 2 years, we will see the numbers start to swing the other direction because more people will have seen it. And I think it'll ultimately probably stabilize closer to where it is on its IMDb rating. So it'll probably be in the fives. The critics will have obviously still hated it, but I think as it hits on demand, as it hits a streaming service and people can really just sort of like conveniently couch watch it, people will be disarmed. There will be no expectation of this being a blockbuster Jordan Peele film. It'll be a Netflix movie that you throw in on your couch. And so I think it will find its audience over time. The audience may always stay small, but I like the future for it. Whether or not it ever becomes like a cult classic, I don't know, but I would be curious to see if more people begin to sort of like theorize about like what is actually happening in the movie and have some conversations on it. 'Cause look, if nothing else, I've seen nothing but this movie being talked about pretty much on social media for the last couple of days. So, yeah, they say no press is bad press, but I think in this case, like a lot of people are not going to theater, so it probably is a little bit of bad press. But yeah, I think it will get better with time. because I think the expectation will be removed.
Yeah, I agree. I think your points about it probably being more of a streaming giant than it is a theater giant, because, you know, even if it is being talked about right now, it's because there's literally nothing going on right now, you know, with Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey and him. Like, those are the talked about movies of the week. And then next week, it's going to be one battle after another. And then all the talk will be about that, you know. And I heard that movie's really good and a lot of people really like it. So I'm sure that's going to be the talk. But I guess this week's talk, there's nothing going on. So I guess let's just talk about him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. It opened in a weird vacuum where there wasn't a ton of competition, especially for like the core audience for this, which I would assume would skew mostly male, although not necessarily mostly sports fans, because, you know, people were comparing it to The Substance, but for men. I also saw The Substance, but for straight men. I also saw, when it was initially advertised as like, finally, straight men will get their black swan. So I saw a lot of those comparisons. But the movie that I most directly compare it to is probably Divinity. So that movie was just like weird, stylistically bizarre, kind of like came out of nowhere. Like, I didn't really know who Eddie Alcazar was when I watched it. And I was just like, I don't know, like, this is my kind of movie. I like the challenge maybe of it.
Yeah, it's weird that people would compare this to The Substance. I would highly disagree with that comparison. I can maybe see small things, but The Substance was a whole different, you know, thing. And that movie was way better, you know, to a million degrees.
But oddly enough, when I watched The Substance, like, I saw it with my wife, and she's not like a big gore person. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the movie, I was like, I loved it. I could totally understand people hating this movie. Mm-hmm. Because it's so over the top, and a lot of people are not like big into like Verhoeven's sort of like sweeping over the top style. And so maybe if that movie wasn't like a, you know, metaphor for feminism and sort of like modern critique of feminism, then maybe it doesn't do so well. But that too is a movie where Coralie had made, I think, like maybe two or three movies before The Substance. So it was a big swing for her, and I think it just landed at the right time, whereas maybe this movie is just not at the right time. Maybe 10, 15 years ago, when we had Any Given Sunday and those kind of movies coming out, or I think that, like, you know, the Longest Yard remake with Adam Sandler, when football movies were a thing again, maybe that was the time for this movie. And maybe there will be a time for it in the future. I'm hopeful, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe the director makes another type of movie and then he'll have his like unofficial horror trilogy, like John Carpenter did. He had his Apocalypse trilogy that was like, you know, unofficial. You know, I'm hopeful for this director. I like the way he does things. I think he can do maybe a little better job with the script and something next time, but he has promise. You know, I'm not going to be like, I'm never watching a movie, you know what I mean, from this guy ever again. Like, I can recognize the good things that are art in this movie in terms of cinematography, acting. Like, there are right choices that were made. It's just unfortunate that it's just a hard kind of movie to watch to a degree.
Yeah, it makes me want to check out a lot of his TV work and see, because it's like, stylistically, it seems like it's not this kind of stuff. So I don't know. But this is only his second feature, I think. He made a mini series right before this. That was the Joe Exotic miniseries. So it's a huge tonal departure from what he was doing, but I'm curious. If I saw his name on something else, I would be like, all right, well, I'm in. Let's roll the dice and see what happens.
Yeah. I think he can make another good horror feature moving forward. Maybe get himself attached with Neon, you know, or A24, and see where we go from there. But this time, make it a little more tight. You know, this is a good starting point, even though it was a hard one. You know, and the budget was cheap. It was $27 million. You know, that's pretty small for a movie nowadays.
Yeah, and probably most of it was on like sets and camera and stuff like that, because they had to like create some interesting camera angles for the actual football sequencing. But yeah, I mean, I assume it's mostly set design and location at that point. And yeah, I mean, if it makes money ultimately in its run, which it doesn't look like it's going to do, you'd be more apt to have somebody give him a second chance. So he might end up in director jail or something for this one for a little bit. But yeah, hopefully it doesn't sour the relationship with him and Peele, and they can find a project to work on together.
Yeah, I think it's a start, but the box office, I'm very curious. You know, when Fandango does its usual like Monday, oh, what made what this weekend? I don't even know if it's going to even be mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, it made $13 million in its opening weekend, so it made half its money back basically. But yeah, it's going to have a steep drop off.
Yeah, it's going to go way down from here. And it's Demon Slayer and Conjuring at my theater was selling more than this one. So that's crazy. Those movies have been, especially Conjuring, has been out for like a little while now, and yet more people are still wanting to go see The Conjuring than something like this.
Yeah, see, I opted for the movie with like an original idea. I was like, I don't need to see The Conjuring 5. You know, maybe it's good, maybe it's not. It's not the top of my list, but I'll roll the dice on something like this more often than I would go back to the well on a franchise horror film. So I appreciate it. A lot of people didn't. We'll see what the future holds for it. But thank you for joining the show to talk about it. I'm glad to hear the opposite perspective.
Yeah, man. Thanks for letting me join you and talk about the movie. I hope next time we can both either agree or disagree. But it was fun to have like a, you know, I see your point, you see my point.
Yeah, I think, well, next time I've got you still penciled in for The Brain, and I do sci-fi stuff in January, so we'll get that scheduled and then probably record like December, early January, something like that.
Sounds good.
Cool. Thanks, man.
All right. We'll see you later, dude.
Awesome. Take care. Thanks to Keon for coming on the show and talking about a movie that he didn't even like. But it was nice to hear the opposing side, and I will make sure that all the links to his socials are up in the show notes. I'm hoping to get at least one of these done per month, but hopefully more. I've got a few lined up right now with Megalopolis, Trap, and Kraven, and I'm just going to keep the ball rolling. So until next time, take care.